and are based in Montreal. The event is Sunday, May 29th at Théâtre Paradoxe. Visit the Uncovered Art Canada Facebook page for more information.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. Democracy Now! Is committed to bringing you the stories and perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. From the peace activists demanding an end to war, to Indigenous leaders fighting to stop fossil fuel extraction and save the planet. Our independent reporting is only possible because we're funded by you, not by the weapons manufacturers when we cover war or gun violence, not by the oil, gas, coal, or nuclear companies when we cover the climate crisis. We count on your generous support to keep Democracy Now! Going. Please make your donation of $5, $10, or more at democracynow.org. Every dollar counts. Thank you so much. We're counting on you. Stay safe. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are?
That's the commitment we made.
In his first trip to Asia as president, Joe Biden's promise to defend Taiwan militarily if it's invaded by China. The White House took back his words, but was it a gaffe by the president or a new U.S. policy? We'll talk about Biden's trip, Taiwan, and today's meeting of the Quad, India, Australia, Japan, and the U.S. China's criticized the Quad as the Indo-Pacific version of NATO. Plus, we look at The Ransom, a new series in the New York Times detailing how France devastated Haiti's economy by forcing Haiti to pay massive reparations for the loss of slave labor after enslaved Haitians rebelled, founding the world's first black republic in 1804.
The New York Times article that was published this weekend, I think, will shed light on the very question of what makes the case of Haiti what we see today in terms of this country that people often refer to as the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations says the number of people displaced by war, conflict, and human rights abuses has topped 100 million for the first time. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, announced the grim milestone as he met with Rohingya refugees who fled violence and government persecution in Burma.
Much as we're all focusing on Ukraine as a catastrophic emergency, we must not forget that there's other critical situations in the world that need attention and resources.
In Burma, at least 17 Rohingya, including three children, drowned after their boat capsized off the coast over the weekend. Dozens more are missing and fear dead. It's believed the Rohingya were attempting to cross the Bay of Bengal from Malaysia, fleeing persecution by Burma's military rulers. The UN reports as many as 10,000 Rohingya were killed by Burmese forces during the 2017 genocide, though some estimates put the death toll at double that number. Another 730,000 Rohingya were forced to flee Burma. In Mexico, three Honduran asylum seekers died Monday after their boat capsized off the coast of Veracruz. At least four others are missing. Another four were rescued, including a 12-year-old child. This is one of the survivors.
It is something sad, but just imagine, people won't stop trying to reach the U.S. because it's supposed to provide a better life. Don't think things are easy in our country.
This comes after a 36-year-old father from El Salvador and his 7-year-old son drowned in the Suchiate River as they attempted to cross into Mexico from Guatemala. In related news, asylum seekers trapped in the Mexican border, a city of Tijuana, led a protest Monday denouncing the Biden administration's use of Title 42, the Trump-era pandemic order that's been used to bar entry to over 2 million people arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border seeking refugee status. A federal judge on Friday ordered the Biden administration to continue enforcing the policy. Protesters insist they have a right under international law to claim asylum.
For us, Title 42 ends the dream of many, because in all immigrants' dreams, asylum is a right, and Title 42 takes that right away from us.
We've been here for almost a year in Tijuana. We've been in a shelter for 5 months, and we've been in a rented apartment for 5 more months, and it has been very difficult. I hope they give us support and let us enter the U.S., and we hope things there will be different, because here in Tijuana, there is also a lot of danger.
In Yemen, 3 people were killed Monday after a drone crashed into a residential neighborhood in the capital, Sana'a. Witnesses said the Saudi-led coalition drone was shot down by Houthi rebels as it circled the skies over the capital.
Unfortunately, it fell on citizens. This is a commercial market, and these are street vendors. The spy drone fell on them, and this is a violation of the 2-month truce in Yemen.
The United Nations is calling on Yemen's Houthi rebels and the Saudi-led coalition to extend the ceasefire, which is due to expire on June 1st. The World Food Program says 5 years of continuous war in Yemen has sparked the world's worst humanitarian crisis, with about 2/3 of all Yemenis, or some 20 million people, suffering from hunger and malnutrition. In Ukraine, at least one person was injured Monday as Russian forces shelled the center of Kharkiv. Residents showed reporters remnants of what appeared to be Russian cluster bombs used in the assault. Cluster munitions are banned under a global treaty that has not been ratified by Russia, Ukraine, or the United States. On Monday, the United Nations reported more than 2 million refugees have returned to Ukraine after Russian forces failed to capture major cities. On Monday, Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, said he's willing to negotiate an end to the war, but only through direct talks with President Vladimir Putin.
I cannot accept any kind of meeting with anyone coming from the Russian Federation but the president of the Russian Federation, and only in the case when there is one issue on the table, stopping the war. There are no other grounds for any other kind of meeting.
A veteran Russian diplomat has resigned in protest of President Putin's decision to invade Ukraine. Boris Bondarev stepped down Monday from Russia's mission to the United Nations in Geneva, writing in a scathing email to his colleagues that he's never been so ashamed of his country. His resignation letter read in part, quote, "Those who conceive this war want only one thing, to remain in power forever. Live in pompous, tasteless palaces, sail on yachts comparable in tonnage and cost to the entire Russian Navy, enjoying unlimited power and complete impunity. To achieve that, they're willing to sacrifice as many lives as it takes," the Russian official Boris Bondarev wrote. Pfizer reported Monday 3 smaller-sized doses of its COVID-19 vaccine were safe and effective at preventing symptomatic illness in children under the age of 5. Pfizer's announcement came as it prepared to submit a request for emergency use of its pediatric vaccine for U.S. children as young as 6 months old. Approval could come after the FDA convenes a panel of independent vaccine experts June 15th, when the agency will also consider Moderna's application for emergency use of its vaccine in young children. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control's warning gay and bisexual men they face an elevated risk of contracting monkeypox after public health officials identified 4 suspected cases of the viral disease in the U.S. and 1 definite one. Monkeypox is endemic to Central and West Africa and is most often spread from animals to humans. It can cause rashes and painful lesions on the body that, left untreated, can sometimes be fatal. The World Health Organization has recently identified 200 confirmed and suspected cases across a dozen countries. The WHO epidemiologist, Maria van Kerkhove, said Monday the monkeypox outbreak appears to be linked to sexual activity among men.
The transmission is really happening from close physical contact, skin-to-skin contact. So it's quite different than COVID in that sense. And the thing I just want to say here is that this is a containable situation, particularly in the countries like where we are seeing these outbreaks that are happening across Europe, in North America as well.
The Supreme Court ruled Monday two condemned prisoners in the state of Arizona cannot present new evidence in federal court that could prove they did not receive adequate legal representation leading to their convictions and death sentences. The case involves David Martinez Ramirez and Barry Lee Jones, who say their lawyers failed to present evidence that could have exonerated them. Writing for the court's 6-3 conservative majority, Justice Clarence Thomas ruled that, quote, serial relitigation of final convictions undermines the finality that is essential to both the retributive and deterrent functions of criminal law, unquote. Critics say the ruling will prevent people wrongly convicted of crimes from proving their innocence. In a scathing dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor called the decision perverse and illogical. Sotomayor wrote, quote, two men whose trial attorneys did not provide even the bare minimum level of representation required by the Constitution may be executed because forces outside of their control prevented them from vindicating their constitutional right to counsel, Justice Sotomayor wrote. Amnesty International said Monday the number of executions globally rose by at least 20% in 2021, while the number of death sentences grew by 40%. Over 500 people were executed and more than 2,000 sentenced to death last year. Executions in Saudi Arabia in 2021 more than doubled. In Georgia, former Vice President Mike Pence called Monday for Republicans to rally behind incumbent Governor Brian Kemp, who hopes to be renominated as his party's candidate in today's primary gubernatorial election.
And when you say yes to Governor Brian Kemp tomorrow, you will send a deafening message all across America that the Republican Party is the party of the future.
Governor Kemp faces a primary challenge from David Perdue, the former Republican senator backed by Donald Trump. On Monday, a Trump spokesperson criticized Pence over his endorsement of Kemp, telling The New York Times Pence was, quote, desperate to chase his lost relevance. On Monday, David Perdue threw accusations of racism after he said Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams should, quote, go back to where she came from, unquote. Abrams, who is African-American, moved to Georgia with her family in 1989. Georgia is one of five states holding primary elections today. In a closely watched race, voters in Texas's 28th congressional district will decide between Henry Cuellar, a conservative incumbent who's backed by Democratic leaders, and Jessica Cisneros, a progressive supported by Senator Bernie Sanders and Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. In January, the FBI raided the home and office of Congressmember Cuellar as part of a corruption investigation. In North Carolina, students at Bennett College, with past due tuition bills in collection, will see $1.7 million of their debts erased. The union of borrowers, known as the Debt Collective, purchased and paid off the student loans of nearly 500 black women at Bennett, a historically black, all-women liberal arts college in Greensboro. This comes as activists pressure President Biden to uphold his campaign pledge to cancel student debt, now a $1.7 trillion burden held by some 44 million people across the United States. The Washington Post reports the Justice Department will require federal agents to intervene if they see other law enforcement officers using excessive force. This is the first update to the DOJ's use of force policy in nearly two decades. This policy is scheduled to take place in July and comes after massive racial justice protests erupted in the United States and around the world in response to the police murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis 2 years ago this week. And a senior consultant at Shell has resigned, condemning the fossil fuel giant for expanding its oil and gas production despite mounting scientific warnings this would lead to a climate catastrophe. Carolyn Dennett worked for the company for 11 years and was based in the United Kingdom. She shared news of her resignation in a video posted on LinkedIn.
Today I'm quitting because of Shell's double talk on climate. Shell's stated safety ambition is to do no harm. It's called Goal Zero, and it sounds honourable, but they are completely failing on it. They know that continued oil and gas extraction causes extreme harms to our climate, to our environment, and to people. And whatever they say, Shell is simply not winding down on fossil fuels. They're expanding with new exploration and extraction projects against the clear warnings from scientists and dismissing the huge risks from climate change. And I just can't be a part of this anymore.
Welcome back to the New Spins Library on CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will be mainly sunny with a high of 24 degrees Celsius. Thursday will be mainly cloudy with a high of 25 degrees Celsius. Friday will bring rain and a high of 22 degrees Celsius. Saturday will be cloudy with a high of 22 degrees Celsius. Sunday brings a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 24 degrees Celsius. Monday brings a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 26 degrees Celsius. And finally, Tuesday brings a few showers and a high of 27 degrees Celsius.
des jours où l'on se sent si seul au monde. Mais parfois le silence fait plus de ravages qu'une tempête qui rage. Si le vent pouvait seulement souffler quelques mots à ta place, à ta place, à ta place. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, attends-moi dans l'ombre. Je sais que se cache quelque part la lumière qui n'y a jamais. Attends-moi dans l'ombre. Car demain, je reviens. Attends-moi dans l'ombre. Car demain, je reviens. Il y a des rêves qu'il faut savoir abandonner. Car une étincelle ne suffit pas pour faire reprendre le feu. Faut croire que le temps apaisera mes tracas. À ta place, à ta place, à ta place. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, attends-moi dans l'ombre. Je sais que se cache quelque part la lumière qui n'y a jamais. Attends-moi dans l'ombre. Quelque part, je sais qu'elle se cache quelque part. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, attends-moi dans l'ombre. Je sais qu'elle se cache quelque part. Lumière qui n'y a jamais. Attends-moi dans l'ombre. Car demain, je reviens. Attends-moi dans l'ombre. Car demain, je reviens. Attends-moi dans l'ombre. Car demain, je reviens. Attends-moi dans l'ombre. Car demain.
Annual Old School Bluegrass Camp is happening this July in the beautiful Lanark Highlands of Ontario. Old School Bluegrass Camp is a summer camp for grown-ups. At camp, you'll enjoy band labs, bonfire jams, exclusive evening concerts, fresh farm-to-table meals, and world-class instruction from some of bluegrass and old time's brightest stars. So come to camp and connect with your community, find your people, and meet your new best friends. Details at oldschoolbluegrasscamp.wordpress.com.
Start again.
To In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast that's aimed to be listened to while you're in the shower, but you can kind of listen to it anywhere at all.
And we really do mean anywhere. You can listen to this podcast while you're on the moon.
You can listen to this podcast while you are grooming your pet cat.
You can listen to this podcast while you're making some orange jelly.
You can listen to this podcast while you're peeling some carrots.
Taz, what's the whole point of this podcast?
The point of this podcast is that we answer the mysteries of the world. Listeners send in questions that they've always wondered the answer to, but never quite went as far as trying to figure it out. Thus far, we've answered questions like...
Why do we fall in love?
Why do farts smell?
Why do we put up Christmas trees?
How much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
And loads more.
I suppose you could say...
We expand your mind while you wash your behind.
And this week's episode is no different.
This week's question is good. It's really solid. It comes all the way from Antwerp in Belgium.
This question even got Marcus to put up a little poll on his Instagram.
Oh, it was divisive, all right. And the amount of answers that I got that were kind of just based on emotion rather than anything. As I said, this question, all the way from Antwerp in Belgium, asked by Lydia Dorsers, says, please put this to bed once and for all. Who are better drivers, men or women? Oh, today's question is massive, and one that caused arguments all over my Instagram, all over my Facebook, and I'm not going to say it's caused arguments between myself and Taz, but it's a fairly emotional thing. It's kind of trying to break down who make better drivers. Is it men or women?
I think before we get started into this episode, it's worth mentioning that as ashamed as I am to say this, neither Marcus or myself drive. We are so lazy and we don't drive.
It's not even that we don't drive. We don't have driver's licenses. We've never had driver's licenses. And like, whatever. I grew up in, you know, the city centre of a capital city. So I could walk everywhere. But you grew up in the countryside. Like, what's your excuse?
I don't have an excuse. It just seems like this really big thing. And the older I get, I'm more and more scared to do it.
But you know what? I think the fact that we don't drive makes us the perfect impartial adjudicators to put this question to bed. So Taz, who do you think make better drivers, men or women?
Well, I'm going to hold out for my sisters here. I am pretty certain that we're going to come out on top.
And like, in a non-biased way, what makes you say that?
I just think that women in general come out on top. Like, they're safer people. They're, you know, they have sharper reflexes.
Sharper reflexes.
They're more conscious of what's happening around them.
Like a ninja.
Don't get me started on multitasking. You know, men can get all highly strung, and I hear men cursing way more in cars. Women on roads are better. It's a no-brainer.
That's really interesting. That, like, you know, you're kind of putting it down to just women are class and have deadly reflexes and are road ninjas. So we'll see if you're correct at the end of the episode. The lines which divide this are fairly tricky to navigate, but it is really, really interesting.
All right, get your hands at 10 and 2 for me.
All right, yeah.
Hands on the wheel.
Uh-huh.
Break this one down for me.
All right, so this all started when Lydia from Antwerp sent us this question. I put a poll up on my Instagram and over 900 people voted on it. And women came out as better drivers in the public opinion by 63%. Which I found really interesting. And it kind of, wink, wink, drove me to look at some figures.
Oh, are we starting the car puns already? That's a slippery road, Marcus.
Yeah, it might be a false start.
Shouldn't have opened that door.
We better dash on. That's a bit weak, dashboard.
Yeah. It's exhausting. Go on.
Exhausting. Give it the boot, will you?
No. Car puns are key.
Well, they're driving me around the bends.
Okay, that's enough. Hit me with the truth.
So basically, almost every public survey about this topic comes out with women on top as better, safer drivers.
Woo woo!
So what you said at the start of the episode rings true. The women are perceived as safer, more alert, and if you put them side by side, have less serious crashes than men.
Boom! Score one for the girlos!
But, there's always a but. It's like Kim Kardashian's Instagram feed. You know, if you look a little bit deeper, the truth of the matter paints a very different story.
Ah, shite.
Yeah. So in studies, men as a whole display less cautious behaviour than women, such as driving at higher speeds more consistently and driving closer to other cars, not wearing seatbelts, and even driving while intoxicated far more often than women. And they generally take riskier turns and, yeah, are just a little bit more reckless.
Hang on. Okay, so they're less cautious,
mm-hmm.
more at risk of crashing, mm-hmm. driving at higher speeds, driving close to other cars, not wearing seatbelts. How is this your defense?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Despite all that reckless, shitty, you know, kind of like testosterone-fueled driving behavior, men are involved in less accidents when you take a very important factor into the equation, which is the time spent on the road.
As in actual hours spent behind the wheel.
Well, yeah, exactly. Men spend a hell of a lot more time behind the wheel, on average. A study conducted by John Hopkins School of Medicine and Public Health showed that men have, on average, 5.1 crashes for every 1 million miles that they drive. Women, on the other hand, have 5.7 crashes for the same number of miles driven. And these results are even more telling when you consider that men drive a whopping 74% more miles than women do.
Okay, but that's off by 0.6%. That's barely anything.
I know it's tight, and like that margin is really small, and you know, it looks small. But if you take age into account, the figures get considerably more skewed. The vast majority of injury-causing crashes over on the male side are caused by drivers under 20. Between the ages of 20 and 35, women and men are equally likely to be involved in crashes. And over the age of 35, women are far more likely to be involved in crashes. Basically, women drive less, but crash more.
Okay, so women are worse drivers. Because although men might be in more crashes, if you're taking time spent behind the wheel, then women are actually, per woman, per capita, are in more accidents than men.
Yeah, so like, it's the question, like, does it make women worse drivers? Like, is it that definitive? And the answer is yes, and also no.
Stop making this so open-ended. We have to answer this question for Lydia.
I know, but this is what makes it tricky, Lydia. Women may crash more, but it doesn't necessarily make them worse drivers.
Okay, women crash more, not worse drivers. Explain this one to me.
I know, listen. So in almost all scenarios, women tend to respect the rules of the road more. They stick to speed limits, indicate properly, and even tailgate less. Tailgating recently in Ireland was voted as the most annoying driving habit.
What is tailgating?
Is when you drive too close to the car in front of you. So it's basically creating an unsafe distance between the cars. Nearly half of men approached hazards too fast, compared with only a quarter of women. And while more than half of men drove through amber lights when it was turning to red, only 14% of women did the same. So, I mean, like, if you look at that, that's a clear display of more risky, reckless behaviour on male fronts. And yet, women are crashing more.
Yeah, where does this leave us? If women are technically safer drivers, why are they technically crashing more?
See, this is one of those questions which is pretty much unanswerable in a really definitive kind of way. I mean, you can look at the figures on paper and say that, yeah, one might be better than the other. But the reality of it is that maybe one of them crashes more because they obey the rules more and it's less instinctual, if that kind of makes sense.
Okay.
So I suppose I'm going to put some facts on the table and let you, the listeners, make up your own minds. Because there is no real winner here. It's just, you know, it's all a bit terrifying. It makes me not ever want to go onto the road.
So loads of theorists have different varying opinions on this. And it was too hard to kind of pinpoint one as being the definitive answer. So you're going to give us some facts, and myself, alongside all of our listeners, are going to decide for ourselves.
Right. So men are more aggressive drivers. They display more dodgy behaviour, such as breaking speed limits, drink driving, and not respecting the rules of the road. Women tend to be more cautious and yet statistically crash more than men, with 5.7 crashes for every million miles driven compared to 5.1% for the guys. And that's despite the fact that the male population on average drives 74% more miles than women. More serious accidents are caused by males below the age of 20, and young men tend to get behind the wheels of a car a lot earlier than on the female side. But after the age of 35, women are more likely to get into crashes. So, I mean, that's a kind of a bulk of statistics that there's pros and cons to each gender driving.
And it's kind of, it's too hard to say that, you know, from the driving, from when a man starts driving to the end of his life comparing to when a woman starts driving at the start of her life comparing to the end of her life, there's obviously going to be chunks of times in between your life that, you know, it's going to be riskier to be a female driver or riskier to be a male driver. Like, older female drivers seem to be, you know, more at risk, mm-hmm. and younger male drivers seem to be more at risk.
Does that make sense?
Kind of.
I feel like Lydia is going to be listening to this in Antwerp, just going, like, just being like, this is, You've let me down, Taz and Marcus.
But you know what? To go back to her original question, and she was saying, you know, why do men always think that they are better drivers? I suppose, although we couldn't definitively say who was a better driver, like going into the psychology of it a bit and why men think that they're better drivers is obviously throughout history, men have always been, you know, thought to be better at machinery, thought to be better working with their hands, thought to be better, you know, at technology, at cars, at motor sciences, etc. So there's no doubt that that is kind of wedged into people's minds as to why, when it's laid down on paper, men would be considered better drivers.
It's also a really interesting thing about the perception of yourself can make you a better or worse driver. A lot of women were surveyed and found out that because they thought that women were worse drivers, they were making errors and blaming it on their gender as opposed to their individual skills.
No way.
Very, very interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it is, I don't know if it's the same with you, but if I'm in the car with somebody and, you know, a car pulls in front really, really mm-hmm. quickly or makes a mistake or doesn't have their indicator on, I feel like the person who's driving would automatically say, what's she doing? Or where is that? Like, you know, where's mm-hmm. your missus going? Or, geez, she can't drive. Well, you know, without even knowing the gender of the person. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just ingrained in your mind.
Do you know what? I think the thing we can all agree on, regardless of whether you are a great female driver or a shitty male driver or a great male driver or a shitty female driver, is if you're getting behind the wheel of a car, don't be an asshole. Don't be a jerk. Wear your seatbelt. Definitely don't ever, ever, ever drink and drive. And try not to be an angry driver. Because then, regardless of statistics or gender, everyone on the road loses.
That's exactly it. And I know this is a pretty kind of bleak way to end the episode, but my dad was in an accident yesterday and he's absolutely fine. But the reason he was in a motorbike accident and the reason he's fine is because he was completely padded up and was wearing a massive helmet. And he's grand, he's only broke a few ribs. But if he wasn't wearing a helmet and proper gear, he would be dead. So guys, wear protection in all rooms.
Moral of the story, wear protection. Are you ready for some traffic facts?
Yes, traffic facts.
I was going to do car accident facts, but they are bleak.
Oh no.
They are bleak. So in 2010, a traffic jam on the highway near Beijing kept cars stuck in traffic for more than a week.
What?
Yeah, 9 to 12 days, according to different sources. The traffic jam itself went on for 97 kilometres and the locals sold food and water to the drivers for prices that were 10 times higher than normal.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So they just like
imagine being
set
stuck,
up camp in their car.
Yeah, imagine being stuck in traffic for 12 days.
I can't actually.
Mm-hmm. Worst holiday ever, just to go to Butlins. Jesus. The first ever traffic lights were manually operated and gas lit. They were installed in 1868 outside the House of Parliament in Westminster.
I wonder if that's where Keeper Lit came from.
Maybe. How shit would it be being like the first traffic light operator, being like, oh God, now I have to light the green candle. I have to light the orange candle. Oh my God, where am I going? Like that must have been frustrating.
The pressure. Mm-hmm. Okay, another one?
This is bonkers. Obviously, Ireland's a very small country, so it's hard to get globally impactful statistics. But if 1 in 10 Americans regularly use public transportation, US reliance on foreign oil could decline by more than 40%, or nearly the amount of oil imported from Saudi Arabia every single year.
Oh my God. What an interesting episode. Thank you so much, Lydia, for sending the question in.
Absolutely. Lydia, hope this has satisfied your itch for knowledge in Antwerp.
If you're like Lydia and have a question that you would like debunked in a bite-sized, little informative podcast, then you can get us on Facebook at In The Shower with Taz and Marcus.
You can get us on Twitter at In The Shower Pod.
Or if you want to send your question via email, you can get us at intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com.
We love hearing from you, so get in touch.
Even if you don't have a question and you just want to say that you like the
just
podcast.
Just get in touch.
Even
just,
if you're thinking, should I message them and tell them? Nah.
Just holler.
Please holler, let us boys. Know. We love. If I open the email and I see a message from somebody saying they listen to the podcast, it's like a little rush of endorphins to my mind.
Send nudes.
Make me happy.
Regardless, thank you so much for listening. And if you like what we do, please recommend us to a friend. That is how podcasts grow. It's how your circle of friend grows. And that's how all of your knowledge grows. And all of a sudden your dinner parties are awesome. And you're talking to people in bars and they think you're sexy because you know stuff. And it's down to in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Woo, woo, woo. Few thank yous to end the episode.
Couple of thank yous indeed. Thank you very much to all the folk in the Head Stuff Podcast Network office. We couldn't do what we do without your love and support, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan, Paddy, Rebecca, and everyone in there. We love you. Next up.
Thank you, Flo Robinson, our incredibly talented illustrator and designer.
And finally, thank you very much to Dave Gertzman for our amazing, amazing music that goes something like this.
1, 2, 3, 4. Bum da bum ba bum ba da bum ba bum. Okay, so
next week's question.
This question, you know what? When I read it, I was like, this is stupid. But then when I started researching it, oh my God. Really interesting.
What is it? What is it?
So this was sent by Isolt Brown in Dunleary, which is in Dublin for all our Antwerpian listeners. Why do most black cats have a little white spot?
Oh, what a brilliant, brilliant question. That episode is going to be out next Monday in time for your morning shower. But in the meantime,
keep scrubbing.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
We are Jitensha.
And you're listening to the New Spins Library
on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
It's finally time to bring back smiles, all of them.
Shy smiles, carefree smiles, ear-to-ear pearly white flashers, polite smiles, nervous smiles, knowing smiles, and kind smiles. Wearing a mask is no longer mandatory in Quebec, except on public transit, in healthcare facilities, and in the days following your isolation period if you had COVID-19. Feel free to keep wearing one if you feel the need, and do it with a smile. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
C'est enfin le retour des sourires. De tous les sourires. Le sourire timide, le franc, le fendu jusqu'aux oreilles, le poli, le crispé, le complice et le doux. Parce que le port du masque n'est plus obligatoire au Québec, sauf dans les transports collectifs, dans les établissements de santé et durant les jours suivant votre isolement si vous avez eu la COVID-19. Si vous en sentez le besoin, portez-le sans hésiter et faites-le avec le sourire. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
That wraps it up for the New Spins Library. Keep on listening to CKUT.
Swanee Parolpopolo is back, and in real life for its 22nd edition. All the sights, sounds, and sensations of live music. After 2 years of online adaptation, Swanee is filling up the month of June with liberated music of all genres. Over 45 events and 90 participating artists performing indoors, outdoors, streamed for maximum accessibility. Record and book launches, workshops, a puppet show, a satellite Swanee happening in Wakefield, Quebec, of all places, and, of course, much more. For all the goodies, check out SwaneeParolpopolo.org. Masks will, of course, be required. For your audio program guide, tune into the Montreal Sessions, Tuesday, May 24th, May 31st, and June 7th and 14th, from 3 till 5 p.m. The Swanee crew hosts will be serving up highlights of what to expect at this year's festival. This is, of course, a CKUT co-presentation.
The following is a previously broadcast program.